This is Max Q, the podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for working artists in today's world. Multifaceted careers, time management, finances, finding balance between your life and your work. We explore that and more on the Max Q podcast. This week, I'm joined by composer and vocalist Daniel Sabskabayi, a 2017 Peabody graduate. Daniel immediately went on to pursue his doctorate after Peabody, all the time growing his list of commissions and premieres. I wanted to speak with him about how he cultivated the connections that enable his many collaborations, as well as how he created a space for himself as a composer. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on Max Q. It's great to speak with you again. I'm looking forward to learning a little bit about what your life looks like right now. If you could tell us what you're working on and what your current projects are.
Yeah, so usually I'm based in Ithaca, New York, where I'm finishing the fourth year of my doctorate. I have about one more year left, but I am currently in Rockland, Maine, where I'm finishing my second month of a two-month residency with the Ellis Beauregard Foundation, which is an arts organization based in Rockland, Maine. And here I'm just working on two big projects, one I just finished and another one that I'm trying to get done. Both are late, as usual for me. But the first one, I did a duo for Wet Ink Ensemble, which was for singing cellist and singing violinist, called Posht Be Posht, which means back to back in Farsi. And it's a reflection on various parts of Chehre Be Chehre, which is a Shajarian album. And it's with him and Lotfi, a really famous other Persian musician. And this work, they play back to back like this. And it's about the relationship of Shajarian and Lotfi, those two, and then the relationship of the two performers. So it's like four people, two relationships, and the way that they manifest in that way. The performers were Josh Modney and Mariel Roberts. And I did a little interview with them and learned about their relationship, and that manifested in the work that I created for them. And it's a reflection on various parts of Chehre Be Chehre, and it has some different types of singing techniques and humming techniques that they have to do. And then it has some Farsi they have to sing as well. and so it was fun. It was stressful, I'll be honest, and say that this, starting since January, I've had the longest drought of my comp career, except for when I was at Peabody after my father was killed in a car accident in 2016. And so other than that time in my life, when I was there at Peabody, this was the second longest time I've ever had where I've just had a huge drought and just like not been able to write, but I can't afford to now. I have so many projects that are due and coming up soon. So that sucked. But now that I'm past the hump and I wrote more last week when I finished the piece than I had in 3 months in one night. But that piece is done. I have to mix all the video and audio, and that'll be coming out on Saturday for some part of our like Cornell documentation series. We usually have a residency in person, but for this, we're doing like a evening of like works that you can like listen to and look at the video if there's video part of it. So I did that. And now the next piece I'm doing is for Copeland House Cultivate. I'm one of the fellows for that. So I'm doing a work for violin, cello, piano, and clarinet, which reflects on this old Persian song called Atashe Karavan, which means caravan fire. It's a famous song by Tajvidi and Delkash. And so it kind of explores the vocality of the clarinet. And it's a little like, I don't know, concertino for the clarinet and the rest of the ensemble.
Do you know what was the cause of your inspirational drought? And like, do you have ways that you kind of work through that? Like, what is the experience of being in a drought like, if you're open to talking about it?
I think that it's a combination of a lot of factors, but I'll break down the ones that I think played into it. One, since last January, just before the pandemic, I had a lot of projects. And then at the same time I had to do my doctoral exams, which were really stressful, to go to candidacy and be ABD. So I had a lot of work and very, very little downtime. And that continued from, let's say, February until really June or July. And then I took a small amount of time off, and then I had to do a piece for National Sawdust and Jack Quartet. And that was a lot of pressure on me and took a lot of energy too. And so like I just had project to project to project and Cornell work. And so there was all of that stacking up. And then also like pandemic things. I just haven't seen a lot of concerts. And personally, I don't really like to consume like digital media that much when it comes to classical music. I'm not against it. I just like, there's so much free stuff that I can watch that I like a lot at any time. I can look at any YouTube video anytime and I really like doing that. I can play video games anytime and I like doing that. And whenever I have to watch, I don't know, symphony documentation or like just opera documentation, it's for me like a pale surrogate for the thing that I really like to do, which is like go to concerts and consume that media, or sorry, that music, that art in person, and make like these connections in real time. Even if it's like them performing live to a camera, like a live stream thing, it just doesn't feel the same. And I'm not really interested in seeing Zoom operas at all, like zero. So it's just like, I think that's been tough, like not getting to see music perform live, even my own music. Like I've had multiple like pieces the past year, which is like, I've been lucky. I haven't had a lot of commissions fall through, or I haven't lost very much money, which is great. But I haven't gotten to work with other artists live that much. And like, obviously that sucks. So like that connection to learning from hearing my pieces live and from hearing my colleagues' pieces live is really important and keeps me inspired. I guess I didn't know how important it was as much until now. So there's like that idea. And then I think the final one is I usually exercise a lot. I play sports like 6 times a week, usually, like a lot, like almost every day I play basketball or soccer every day. Now I don't do that. And I hate running. It's really boring to me. So I'm like a little less healthy than I usually am. And now I just fill my entire day with like composing, watching video games, playing video games and watching videos. And so I just have so much screen time, like probably over 10 hours a day. So I think when I don't have sound mind body, my work suffers and I feel less inspired to do things. And so I'll put aside 4 to 6 hours a day composing, but I usually end up spending really like 2 or 3 of it actually working, because I just sit there and I stare or I waste time doing something. So I think it's that. It's like not having another outlet, a non-artistic outlet, which is like for me, exercise and playing sports. Not seeing concerts as much, and then like work stress, and so that I want to take more time off. But then that balloons, or sorry, I'm doing the wrong, it balloons. and it's like starting a steamroller. The more time I take off, the harder it is to start it again. And that's kind of how I felt. And I'm on the other side now. I feel a lot more inspired, and I've been writing a lot since I've been here. But it was tough. And I learned through this process, that the amount of self-worth that I garner from producing good work is very, very large. So I feel depressed because I'm not writing. And I know that if I write, I will feel better. But getting the gumption to make myself write is hard sometimes.
Oh, man, I hear that. I hear that so strongly. I want to go back to something you said earlier on about, you've managed to kind of carry over commissions and stuff throughout the pandemic. And I know that that's something that not everybody has been so lucky in. I don't know if you have any ideas about kind of how you were able to build, whether it was like a network or just a process that allowed you to keep that kind of work coming in over the course of this period when it's been a struggle.
One, I apply to a lot of stuff. So, I mean, it's a big part of like the amount of time that I spend for my job a week is like budgeting time for grants and opportunities. just being yourself out there, because getting rejected sucks, but like at this point I'm just so used to it that it's not even personal. I mean, there's ones that I get upset about where I'm like, I just think I should get this or I deserve this or whatever, but when they get 400 applications, 500 applications, even when they get 100 applications, 50, still, they're going to choose usually between one and like three usually. And that's a really small percentage. So just like applying to a lot of stuff. And then I think having your squad is really important. That's something that has been really resonating with me, is like just people that you know understand the work that you do, whether you're creating, making, like composing things or performing, like just folks who you know resonate with you as a person and as an artist, that you have a baseline understanding, who want to continue to work with you. And like those people for me are like really essential, because if I don't have them, then my work doesn't get disseminated. And so I think it's, yeah, meeting the right people and like trying to find like-minded individuals as you, finding the right opportunities and just applying to stuff. And then, you know, having a thick skin is important. Like you're going to get rejected. It happens a lot, and that's okay. Like it's not a big deal.
So, I mean, obviously this is a process that you've like built up. How did you get started with building up? I mean, I'm interested in all three of these pieces, right? Like the thick skin, I kind of get how that one kind of comes together. It oftentimes, for better or worse, just comes as kind of a thing that I think a lot of people in the music industry grow, because if they don't, it hurts more and more. Was there a specific time where you started to build this process in of applications, and how did you start doing that?
I think that it's a combination of research, of finding opportunities and people that you think resonate with the work that you do, and then taking shots that you think you maybe aren't qualified for or aren't ready, and just doing it. And so I think it's a blend of that. There are times where there's some people I think that like, okay, this opportunity or this person, it's a knockout. Like we're going to work together. It's going to be great. I'm going to apply for the thing, or I'm going to send them an email, like a cold one, just be like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes it's just like, even if you think like you appreciate their art or you appreciate them, hopefully it's both, but sometimes it doesn't line up like that. And I think that's okay. There's plenty of people whose work I really admire and who I would love to work with, but as people, we're not good. Like it's oil and water, and that's okay though. That's not a big deal. Like the world is big. There's so many artists. So I think it's bad to get obsessed or fixated on one portion of your work or yourself and or one person, because you have a lot to give, and there are a lot of people to work with. So I think just being open, being vulnerable, and being like honest about your needs and wants as an artist, and then those who can compliment them or challenge you, is like great. So I think that's kind of the first one, is like finding the right people and putting yourself out there. And then with applications and things, it's just like, I always say that you build a mountain. So like I have applied to so many things. I have a body of work of applications and grant things. Like I kind of think of myself as like basically a professional grant writer at this point. Like I'm really good at it, and I'm not being cocky. It's just that I spend a lot of time doing it. I know for most of the things what they're looking for and how decent or not good of a shot I have for the things that I've applied to. And so like I cannibalize so much of my own stuff. Tons of applications that I can send out and finish and tweak to a new thing in like under an hour, right? Like, so it's daunting to start, because let's say you don't have enough recordings, or you don't think you've met the right people, you don't have the right letters. What does your letter of interest say? Like all of these hoops you have to do. They're all kind of annoying to do, because at the end of the day, what you want is either the money or the person or whatever. Like you want the thing, they know that, but they just want you to give a good description of the plan that you have, right? Like, so I think it's having a good portfolio. So building that portfolio up, right? Like having, like I guess for opera singers, it's like having your book of five. For comp, I always say that you should have like your three, You should have like three pieces that I think you can rotate out, and they'll change, at least for me, for what I'm applying to, who, if I know the panelists or historically what they choose and what they like. Like if I'm applying to instrumental things, I'm not going to send vocal music usually. Just being selective with your portfolio, meeting the right people to write you letters. Like the advice that I've gotten in general is like, try to have one person who super knows you, who you're like very close with and knows your work and has like a good reputation, but doesn't have to be like someone who's like very, very famous or anything, but just like someone who knows your work as a artist, as a collaborator, as a person, blah, 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 blah. And then usually things are going to ask for one or two. If they ask for two, then I try to send a famous person who I've met. I'm not saying that that's the right thing to do, but that's what has been recommended to me. So I try to send a combination of that. And then if you're applying for something that's like non-artistic or rather non-performance or comp driven, I try to find a letter from someone who knows me as like an educator or as like a whatever, like someone outside who can talk about my work and as a scholar or as a grant writer or whatever, you know? So I think it's finding the right people and trying to meet the right people. And then tailoring your, like accruing a body of work that you can apply with through artistically and like application wise, like just the more you do, the better you get at it. So I think it's, those are the two biggest things for me.
I guess I'm curious as someone who is a little bit an outsider from the composition world, like, well, who are the people on your team? Just as like archetypes, not necessarily the names. But like what roles do they serve? And then a little bit about like, how did you find these people? How do you grow these networks, right?
Most of mine are performers.
Okay.
It's because I don't think that for the most part, other like comp people, we can't do a lot for each other. That's my view on it. I don't avoid comp people, but just like, you know, my closest friend is like a composer at Cornell. Like, of course, because we're a small department. And we're close knit there, but it's a lot different being at Cornell because we, you know, it's one or two composer a year in the department. So there's like 6 to 8 of us. So we're all close. We all know each other. That's like really good for me that we have certain pillars of our relationships that are like values when it comes to, being people and then art too. But I really, what's important to me is that like, I have people challenging me as a creator. So like, my best friend at Peabody is Piwat Louis Lapresser. He's a Thai composer and his work is like amazing, but it's almost diametrically opposed stylistically to mine. And that's really important to me because he challenges me to work on different parts of my work and continue to be really great because the work he does is really high quality also. So that's important to me when I'm working with other people directly in my field. But then, you know, outside of that, I try to keep like, you know, singers, instrumentalists, conductors close to me because I want to work with people and we can help each other do things. And if I want to apply for a grant or I want to propose some sort of new piece, I can just call them up and we propose something, you know. And it's not like there's never pressure. That's what I always try to say, like with people who are close to you, it's not like I have to do a piece and like, ugh. It's more so like I have this idea. Maybe we can apply for a grant together. Or you can approach your board about it. You think, and you know, just giving, like just having a rough idea of things you want to do with them, or maybe you don't have an idea, but your idea is that you really want to work with them. That's also fine too. And that's flattering, I think, to people.
Thinking about this, you know, idea of school, and you talked about how you went before we were recording, just talked briefly about how you went straight on into a DMA, from your master's program. And I'm curious about like what the thought process was for going straight on to do that. Like what was the reasoning? Because obviously that's a decision I think a lot of people, and not just composers, but I think the composer decision is a little bit different. But like what was the reasoning process and what led you there rather than something else?
Yeah, it was really simple for me. I looked at the alternatives and there was very few. That was my opinion.
What did you see the alternatives as?
Work an arts admin job, which I was not stoked at the time. I really think I had a lot more. I still think I have a lot more to learn and do with my comp that I really wanted to focus directly on working on doing comp longer. So like admin, non-musical job, or freelance, right? And I just put pen to paper and thought about the numbers. And at that time in my life, I was making about like $1,000 to $3,000 per commission. I was doing smaller pieces. I wasn't doing like opera or like orchestra things. And if I wanted to make a living wage, I would have to write like over 15 pieces a year, probably. That's a lot of work. And I would have no health insurance. So I was not stoked about going back to Denton, Texas to do that. Or trying to navigate the Baltimore music scene. I was also not stoked about that. Not that I have a problem with the Baltimore music scene, but rather I didn't feel that I could make those ends meet in the amount of time coming up, okay? So then when I was doing my master's, I wasn't really keen on doing a doctorate, I'll be honest. But as the time passed and I got closer to the end, I was like, well, maybe I should just at least look into it. And here's what I found. All the best programs that I was interested in, all of them that I applied to for doctorate, all had these things in common. Free, health insurance, stipend of at least $30,000 a year. So that was kind of like a good deal for me because that sounds really good to me. And luckily, I ended up getting into Cornell and getting to do this. And I'll just say from almost the other side, like I'm close to finishing my program, that it's been really rewarding to me. I think if you want to spend more time writing and you want to have stability, it's very good. Coming from Peabody, where I had almost no money and I was like working multiple jobs to make ends meet, to being at Cornell, where I pretty much just worry about writing, sometimes TA, and like my dissertation and courses, right? Like I have very few stressors outside of creating art. And I have enough money to eat good food, pay my rent, and travel when I need to, because we have really good travel scholarships too at the Cornell. And I have health insurance. All of those things, really, they amalgamate to make me a better artist. Like I had a lot of anxiety and worries during my time at Peabody, for outside and inside pressures both. But now that I've been at Cornell, it's like, I mean, it's just your mental health, the way that it affects your physical health, and the way that goes to affect your ability to create like art and practice and like become better artists, for me has been night and day difference to other times in my life. And so it was like, I wanted to keep writing. There were these avenues at multiple universities that I applied to that had ways to do that. And the program at Cornell is not very rigorous in regards to coursework or things to do. Like it's very self-driven. Mm-hmm. So the things that I want to learn, I have learned. I've been working on Farsi. That's something that was really important to me. I've been learning more about Persian music. That's been really important to me. I've chosen a committee for people who are reviewing my dissertation and giving me my advisory like committee. I chose people who I really vibe with, and they have been helping me. So like it's, for me, at least the program here is really self-driven and self-motivated. And so if you aren't about that, I don't think that you should do a doctorate. There's no reason. Because like I'll be straight with you immediately. I'm not doing a doctorate because I want to teach necessarily. Maybe I will. I'm not against it. But I'm doing a doctorate because it's 4 years of time for me to work on my composition. And I have a salary that's not tied to my output as an artist and health insurance. And I'm learning a lot. So it's been great. I was against it initially until I learned that this was an option that I did not know about. So I always tell anybody who wants to do a doctorate, at least in comp, there is no reason that you should pay. None. Zero. Because not like the best, like fanciest programs are going to like be really competitive. But there are plenty of other programs that will maybe pay less. But at bare minimum, you should not be paying. Because there are so many that you don't have to pay. Because you can teach. You're a TA, you'll have fellowships or whatever, but I'm just saying that, and like, what would it get for you? Like, why would you pay for a doctorate in comp? What do you think it's going to do for you? That's kind of my question. And if there's so many opportunities to not pay, you should not. Because there's so many programs that are free.
Looking back at kind of, we kind of just talked about this a little bit, so it's a continuation perhaps, but like what were, you know, briefly kind of the goals you had coming out of your master's program, and now that you're coming out of this DMA program, what are the goals that you have? And that could be, you know, career goals or kind of more broadly. I'm just kind of curious to see how things have shifted with the shifting kind of state of where you are and where your practice is at.
So coming from my master's, it was like getting through a doctoral program. I applied to no safety schools. I only applied to schools that I really wanted to go to. That was it.
Can I ask for a mulligan then and say, like, what were your goals then coming into your master's program?
Okay. That seems like an eternity ago, but let me think about it for a second. Work on my orchestration, get better at writing for orchestra. Just because I came from singing in vocal and choral world, and as many know in the field, there are not a lot of people doing comp who are singers. And if they are, most of them are writing specifically vocal or choral music, or operatic or choral music. That's not my interest, meaning I have a wide interest. Like, I love choral music and opera music and operatic stuff, but I love orchestra music. I love chamber music, multimedia things. Like, I have a wide interest. So it was like, work on orchestration. That's why I chose to study with Putz. That's what he's good at. That's his skill set. I wanted to work on that. So that was my main thing. It was work on orchestration, meet like-minded individuals who could help me or who I could work with in the future, and work on like improving my portfolio of works, but also like of folks that I've met and like recognition, blah, 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 awards, whatever. It's a necessary evil at some point, I think. You don't have to navigate the prize circuit, but if you don't, I think it's a big choice. Like, I think throwing your hat into the ring of things that are free and don't have an application fee, there's a lot for comp. Unlike other fields, there's many that you don't have to pay. So I think that those were kind of the things that I wanted to do. And then going into my doctorate,
I was going to say, I'm interested, you know, I'm still keeping that as coming out now. Like, what do things look like right now?
So the things that I'm looking at transitioning from being at Cornell and leaving is, I like what I'm doing currently, like about this residency. So I'm looking at doing more residencies. I've done a number and I really like doing them. And usually the ones that I apply to are free. They come with a little stipend and then you have time to work. That's kind of what I want. I don't need a bajillion dollars, but I'm going to have 4 degrees in this, so I need some money. So residencies are something. I'll apply for postdocs, and usually these postdocs aren't necessarily in music. They're usually in humanities through the bigger universities. There's some music postdocs, like UChicago has a music postdoc for comp, but they choose, you know, it's like one. So it's like, it's lucky. Anytime that there's one person that they choose for stuff, you know, you can be really great. It's subjective. So postdocs, residencies, and then I'll apply for academic jobs and keep my steady stream of commissions hopefully going. It's been going well since I've been here. I have a lot of pieces I've written and people I've met and things. So I think just the goal for me is to keep a momentum, not do what I did the last 3 months, which is like, don't write a lot, because it makes me feel bad, and it also is hard to start again. So just try and keep that going. And then, like I was when I started Peabody, I still work on writing for orchestra. That's one thing that I haven't done a lot of. It's hard because people who, like, for example, like Pia Watt in my program, this Thai composer, he's had a lot of support in that realm from when he was younger. I've never really had that. And it's a hard world to break into, I think, just like opera is, or any of the like separate things. But it's just funny to me in this discussion about it, because I need less training in like choral stuff and opera stuff. I'm not saying I don't have a lot to learn of each of them, but rather that I have a certain amount of experience and training with them. But I get a lot of opportunities for those two things because I have a track record of doing them. Just as Pia Watt has a track record of writing orchestral music, he gets many of those things. But really, we really need the exact opposite. I really would benefit so much from like a composer in residence at an orchestra, because I could write a lot. I wouldn't have to write, like, and I would learn a lot from working with them instead of these opportunities where it's like one-off, where I write a piece for a student orchestra and they rehearse it like once or twice and then that's it, right? Like, it's just funny because I understand that like they want to work with people who have a track record in the thing, but I think that there could be more programs for developing people who want to do this type of work, which I suppose should be training programs like getting degrees. But look, it just doesn't happen like that. Like, you get maybe one or two readings your entire time at whatever degree program you're doing, writing for the orchestra or writing for an opera project or whatever, and it's not enough. So that's what I would like to do. I think I have a good, like, finishing with my degree, like learning Farsi, like that's a big part of what I want to do, like becoming fluent, working on my understanding of Persian music. Like, I have this large portfolio of like good things, but I think that that's one area of my portfolio that's lacking. And it's not for lack of interest in the thing itself, but lack of opportunity, I feel like, because how it is now for me is like, I feel that I don't have enough time to just write an orchestra piece for a competition or have it sit on the shelf. That's going to take a lot of hours. And I have many other projects to work on that are going to be performed for sure, 100%.
For most of the episodes, I like to end with this question just about, is there any advice that you would give to current students or people, you know, considering going into programs, or current students at Peabody in particular?
I think that my biggest advice is like realizing that the world doesn't begin and end inside the doors of Peabody. Like, people don't care. I was shocked by the amount of people who didn't like do things outside of Peabody. And I think that that's really not good. Like, the amount of singers that I knew who were like poo-pooing being in choir and like doing things that were not opera, who thought they were going to like finish and then become a professional opera singer, was insane to me. It's very competitive. It's hard. Like, you have to work really hard for whatever field you're doing. But I think that like just putting yourself out there and applying to stuff for me has been very, very beneficial. And trying to work with a large swath of people and meet other folks that are outside of the conservatory for me is like very, very important. I'm not saying that your work in like working on yourself and doing important projects through Peabody Opera or through like the Comp Studios collaborations with like the honors ensembles and stuff, whatever, that stuff is great. You get good recordings, you get to make connections with people, that's amazing. But that can't, in my opinion, be the only the place that you stop. Like, if I didn't apply to anything and I didn't strive to work with other people who weren't directly surrounding me, I don't think that I would be anywhere near where I am at this point in my career. Like, it pays dividends, at least for me it has, which is a blessing, and then I'm lucky. But trying to get out of the conservatory as much as you can while you're there is important, because other people are doing the same thing. And if only a small percentage of people in the city of Baltimore, inside of Peabody Conservatory, in your department know you, then that's it. It's tough, because if you're writing really great music or performing really well, but you're performing and writing music really well for five people, it's tough, because I felt that a lot of who you know is important. I'm not saying that you need to make fake relationships, as I said earlier in this, but rather just giving yourself the chance to find those people who you connect with. I think that's important. So the world doesn't begin and end inside the doors of the conservatory. It's a prep, right? It's there. You're there to train.
That was a great note to end on. So thank you, Daniel, so much for taking the time to chat with me. And I look forward to continuing following what's going on with you.
Thanks. Same with you, Robin.
We'll close out this episode with a clip from Daniel's piece, Zemestan. You can find a link to the full recording in the show notes.
Theme music for the MaxQ podcast created by Dimitro Nebish.